podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I'm joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
And Dave Watson.
Hello.
Hello. So, just to let you in on a secret, before we started recording this podcast, we're in sort of crisis mode because I am concerned that this could well be the worst Newcastle Natter ever, and that's saying something. And that's because we've just had an 8-0 win, and I've always thought that the best Natters come after the worst games in the most depressing periods of our history. But I don't know what you really say about an 8-0 win other than it was fantastic. Dave?
I mean, we didn't start great. Can we say that? Like, for the first 10 minutes, it looked like Sheffield were in the game. They had a couple of really good opportunities at 0-0. They could have, you know, that Luke Thomas was finding plenty of space on the left. So can we, like, I'm trying to find some negativity for you here, Fergus. I really am.
It was very enjoyable, wasn't it? Me and Paul watched it in the pub together, didn't we, Paul?
We did. We'd been very good boys to our other halves, and we were allowed to go off to the pub and watch it. And I think both of us thought going in, it was going to be quite a boring game. You have that feeling of, have I wasted an afternoon at the pub on what will be a very dry game? And then we sort of turned into Nostradamus. We were predicting everything that would happen. You said very early on, this is going to be at least 5-0. I predicted Botman's goal about 3 seconds before it happened. It's very odd.
Both those things happened. It was almost too perfect. Arsenal Spurs was on beforehand, so the pub cleared. But so it felt like, you know, after the Lord Mayor's show, if that's a phrase I feel confident trying out for the first time. But I really, really, really wanted us, I'm actually furious about this. I really wanted us to score 10, but it never, ever happens. Why do we never score 10?
We should have had a penalty, so it should have been at least 9.
And Wilson had like 2 or 3 opportunities where he should have scored, like should have scored.
That is true. He should have had a hat trick before he actually got a goal. We got, we did beat Sheffield Wednesday 8-0.
Mm-hmm.
20-something years ago, didn't we, in Bobby Robson's first game, right?
First home game, yeah.
Home game.
That when Shearer got 5. So, but it always happens, doesn't it? When teams, there's some kind of blockage in the Premier League, right? Every couple of years, a team will win 8 or 9-0 or 8-1 or whatever. In fact, 9-0's only happened once, hasn't it?
It happened twice recently, both times against Southampton.
Leicester did 9 as well, didn't they?
They beat Southampton 9-0. I think someone else beat Southampton 9-0 the year before.
I would be absolutely, like, if I was on Football Manager and I was up by that many goals, I'd be on very attacking. I would be like, I want there to be, to be fair, I don't think we really eased off, did we? But I wanted us to be brutal.
There was about 10 minutes after the 7th goal where you sort of gradually thought, the 10's not coming here. But I mean, that it's split in hairs, really.
It was pathetic.
We were very intense all the way through.
Well, it's 8-7 scorers, Dave. 8 different scorers.
That's only happened once in the top flight before.
Is that right?
Yeah, Liverpool.
Premier League?
Yeah, like 1989, I think. The thing is, at 7-0, Jason Tindall's handing Sean Longstaff like a note, like to like, no, go on, this is how we're going to score again. And within minutes, Isaac got his goal. And it was like, I'm pretty sure that everybody on that pitch wanted us to score 10. Or more, but it's just the game just petered out.
I'm not sure the Sheffield United players did.
Are we sure it was tactical instructions from Jason Tindall, or just like, we are going to get absolutely cunted tonight?
I wouldn't be surprised if it just said, we want 10 or something. Like, don't... as tactical as that.
Yeah. But it was... What was the thing for me is that after about 5-0, the goals that followed, I didn't react to them with like any kind of joy or glee. It was more just kind of confusion and finding it funny. It stopped being, or this is going to sound stupid, but it kind of stopped being impressive and just became a little bit like bullying. And
it was like the Spurs game last season, where the only reaction that feels natural is just laughing at it.
Yeah. Like 8-0 away from home against a side who, you know, they were in it against Man City up until the 90th minute. They were in it against Spurs until the 90th minute. Like, they haven't been like completely blown away during the Premier League until this game. Like, I think I was saying that I'd be happy with like a professional 2-0 win, but we should be looking to win. I was expecting like a tight kind of attritional game. But as soon as the second goal went in, the floodgates just fucking opened. There was no pressure from the Sheffield United players on ours. There were points of the game where Gyökeres and Anderson were 25, 30 yards outside of their box, like, you know, 25 yards outside of their, like, away from their goal, with nobody within 5, 10 yards of them. We had the complete run of Bramall Lane. It seemed
very odd, considering you look at how teams have beaten us this season. It is just from pressing that midfield. And there were,
yeah,
it's like they just went, Bruno's not a particularly good footballer. Let's just let him have the ball in as much space as he wants. Because we don't think this Brazilian international can do anything.
Go on, Dave.
Sorry, just very quickly, touching on Bruno, some of the touches in the centre of the park, he was like rolling his foot over the ball to nutmeg a player and go round him. It was like the outside of his boot to roll over. It was just, he was just having fun by the end of the game. He was bossing it. Anderson played really well, but for me, Anthony Gordon's like clearly man of the match.
Mm.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Let's talk about Anthony Gordon in a moment. I was going to say, we said we wanted a statement win.
Mm.
I think we all predicted it was more likely to come against Burnley, but we certainly got a statement win. I think the first 20 minutes, although it was in that time that I predicted we would win by 5, I don't know why. It felt like, in a weird way, we were... It was fairly even, but it felt like they were sort of trying to go like toe to toe. Do you know what I mean? But we just ultimately have a better 11 by quite some distance. It felt like they were just trying to match us player for player, and that just wasn't going to work out. But yeah, Anthony Gordon, who only came on thanks to Harvey Barnes's injury, may he rest in peace. Apparently, It's quite a serious injury, so
he's not dead though.
He's not dead, just in case. In case you're in his
family. He's gone a bit retro. It's apparently his a metatarsal, and I haven't heard a metatarsal injury since like David Beckham made him famous in the around 2000.
I think Rooney had one as well, didn't he? And apparently it wasn't an impact from a tackle, it was just a weird sort of like pushing himself off thing. That's a shame, because he's not had an amazing start to the season yet, and I'm sure he had high hopes for this being a big game for him. But instead, it solidified Anthony Gordon's place as one of our best players so far this season, right?
Yeah, I think pre-season a lot of people were saying Gordon's going to have a big season and be one of our best players. And to be honest, I kind of thought, well, is he that good? Like, I remember watching him for Everton thinking he was okay. But he, on Sunday, he looked like early Wayne Rooney. It was just his goal, especially, had that look of when Rooney would just get bored and go up a level.
Then he scored one, which was a fantastic finish. He scored one and made one, but it felt like his impact was way bigger. He was just, they couldn't handle him at all.
Well, if Wilson's finishing had been up to it, he would have had at least three assists.
True.
And yeah, he should have had a penalty.
He had a couple of opportunities where there was one where their keeper tipped it over the bar, I think, which led to Dan Burn's goal from that corner. And he had the opportunity where he was, I mean, I can't get too upset about it, but that was 100% a penalty. I can't see how that wasn't given.
I think it only wasn't given because it was already 3-0. I think VAR just went.
It's not how football.
No, I know, but it's clearly how VAR works. You were saying at the time, Fergus, there's like that quote the other week. The VAR was just saying, I didn't want to get my mate in trouble, so I didn't refer it to the screen on the pitch. You think, this is not professional.
And just to clear something up, the handball controversy about the opening goal, it was because it was an accidental touch by the player who didn't score. It's not a handball. So
personally, I think that that shouldn't be a goal. So let me just establish what we're talking about. We're talking about the first goal when Gordon, it looked like the more pressing issue could be that it may well have gone out, and Longstaff looked very concerned about it in the celebration, really didn't want to let himself believe it was true. It was just looked like he was asking Gordon and everyone, is it really a goal? But it did also hit Gordon's hand. But it felt to me like Gordon gained an advantage from it hitting his hand. It gained some control. I feel like that should be, whether it is or it isn't, I feel like that should be a handball. It's a bit like that. You remember Henri for France against Ireland in the playoff for the... was it
that was a bit cup? More deliberate on Rees, though. I think he was.
Yeah.
Not the way I remember it, but okay. Fair enough.
And I guess the thing for me is that I agree with the underlying point that he's gained an unfair advantage by it hitting his hand. And, you know, one of the sacrosanct rules of football is that you can't use your hands. But I just think we've got to get back, like get away from the fuzzy logic of the handball law and just get back to like what it was originally, which is like you're not allowed to deliberately use your hand to gain an advantage. And, you know, there will be cases where the one referee thinks it's deliberate and one doesn't. That's fine. But as it stands now, there are so many like little permutations and caveats and stuff that it is just confusing. I'd rather I think that was a deliberate handball and the ref didn't, rather than going, well, technically it wasn't him who scored it and it didn't, you know, it's bollocks. Just,
but it kind of sums up the problem with VAR, that the law was fine before, but because there's so much inconsistency, because there is human error in VAR, they've tried to correct that inconsistency by changing the law to a worse law. Mm-hmm. That's created a more unfair rule that's enforced slightly more consistently and made the game worse.
I agree.
It's HS2 all over again. Right. Let's have a little break, but there's so much more to talk about. It's through much of the Mike Ashley era, we'd have to get through about 12 podcasts to have 8 goals to talk about. So... So let's enjoy this moment while we can. We'll have a quick break and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. And normally at this stage, I ask if you had a good break, but there's a big time topic of conversation, which has just arisen. All that happened in that break was Dave went for a quick piss. I feel like it was 10 seconds. And he went, apparently there were stairs involved. He went upstairs, presumably, upstairs, downstairs.
Downstairs.
Do you not have a toilet upstairs?
Yeah, but I've got a toilet in the basement.
You've got a better toilet downstairs?
No, it's just closer.
Okay, fine. All right, I understand. You're on ground floor.
Yeah.
You went to the... It was just so quick that it's...
It wasn't that quick.
It was incredibly... It was like lightning.
It was like 2 minutes?
You were back so fast, your image hadn't even disappeared off the Zoom screen.
It was the sort of piss where if I say to my son, did you go for a wee? And he says, yeah. And then I go, did you? And he goes,
well, Dave, did you?
Yeah, yes, I went for a piss. Okay. This is the weirdest. This is worse than Bingate. This is...
Sure. There's not... Okay, but I want to... Let's have this...
I think the speed and intensity that you clearly go at, is it Gagan pissing or is it heavy metal?
It takes me as long as that just to get it going or stop it. Right. Okay, well, we'll keep talking about the football, but I think we've found ourselves a running theme that should take us to at least Christmas. Timing Dave Watson's pisses. And if
can he break 8 seconds before the end of the season?
If you believe you are a quick pisser, then do send your times to at Newcastle Natter on Twitter. What else do we have to talk about with regards to the 8-0, count them, goals? The 8-0 win against Sheffield. Go on.
I wanted to talk about the set pieces because I can't remember, but I'm fairly certain we've spoken about how we haven't scored a lot from set pieces when really we should do, because we make loads of chances, but we're just not putting them away. I thought the set pieces were excellent from Trippier, and I think that I'm delighted for Sven Botman to get his first goal in his 50th game, and big Dan Burn, it's always great to see him score. But it's like Burns was such a simple one. It was just a cross to the back post. But Cher stuck his arse out to block the man marking Dan Burn and just give him that little bit of advantage. But it was so straightforward that I'm really pleased they got the goals, and they were well taken, like well delivered, well executed set pieces. But I think a lot of that has got to do with how fucking terrible Sheffield United are at defending set pieces.
I mean, the shirt pulling on Dan Burn for that goal was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was significant.
But then the shirt pulling was going on throughout the game. I mean, you saw Gordon had his shirt ripped in the first half. And, like, you don't do that to your own shirt, do you?
No. Well, unless there's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
But the XG was only, like, 3-something.
Yeah, like 3.9, something like that.
When you include all those chances that Wilson had, it makes me either suspect XG as a metric or just suggest that there was some good finishing. The best goal of the lot, it was Anthony Gordon, right, Paul?
I thought so, yeah. I think it, like I say before, it's like that. Remember when Rooney scored against us in the Cup semi-final? Where it looked like he was annoyed and just thought, oh, fuck this. I'm going to put the ball in the net. It was one of those where you just sort of like, oh, I didn't realise he could just go up a level like that if he wanted to.
Well, apparently he used to do that kind of goal a lot in like youth football. And when he was, when he moved up a level, he didn't either have the confidence in his own ability to do that or wasn't afforded the time, you know, to do that. But his overall game is coming on leaps and bounds. Like his pressing, his energy's never been in doubt, but it's like the passing choices that he's making, the execution of those passes, the positions he's taking up, the way he's beating men. Like he had Milan's right back on fucking toast. Like Calabria was booked and taken off at halftime because Gordon was just rampant against him. And this is like Milan's captain and right back. And he did the same against whoever Sheffield United had at right back. Forgive me, I can't remember. He had him on toast. It's like his whole game has just come on so much.
He was, a lot of people would have not have predicted this a year or two ago, but he's definitely an upgrade on Saint-Maximin at the moment, isn't he?
Well, he's got all the attacking flair that Saint-Maximin had, but he seems to have end product and work rate and ability to defend and is more versatile.
I saw some comments from Eddie Howe, and I was going to say Andy Howe, and some comments from Eddie Howe about his work rate in training. Apparently he's... it's that football cliche of talking about how he's like always the last to leave training. He always stays late. I never understood, like, given how often that is remarked upon as a thing in training, like that, they always stay after training and work on it. Why isn't every footballer doing that?
You never hear
21 and want to go and play FIFA
training. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Dave.
I was just saying because they're 21 and they want to play FIFA. It was funny though, because like on the same lines, when they were doing some like I don't know, like social media content, they had the football, like the Newcastle team playing like Guess Who. Did you see this?
I didn't see that.
So they've got a few of the first team playing Guess Who, and like Alexander Isak gets it wrong. And he's super competitive. He's like, well, how did I get it wrong? Like, who am I missing? And it was Jacob Murphy. And they said, well, when did he go down? Oh, you put him down when it was like, gets in early for training. He doesn't get in early for training. It's like, I get in at 10 to 9. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, 10 to 9 is not early. Sure enough, Alexander Isak goes, some of us are in at 7. And I'm like, fucking hell, that's early. Like 7 o'clock in the morning, Alexander Isak's apparently there. It's just a different professionalism, isn't it?
Well, maybe he's just in a really bad relationship.
True, I think in other jobs, if you're getting in 2 hours early and leaving late, you're thick. You just like work your hours.
Yeah, true. I have to say, I hate bringing work home. Like doing work after it's finished, but sometimes I just have to.
Wow. I was thinking more like if you're working in a shop, you just keep turning up early before it's opened.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was like Bruno. Like, I genuinely think that was his, I mean, I know it comes with a caveat of the opposition, but like that was his best game for a long time.
Yeah, he's been getting a lot of criticism, hasn't he? Unfairly or not, but it's fair to say it's not been his best period for us. I don't think it's been awful or anything, but he's not been the dominant force that he was for a little while last season.
No, he's not been allowed to either. There was a thing in The Athletic the other week. There were some article about the role of like the modern number six. It was showing all the number sixes in the league. It was something versus how often they're pressed. I can't remember exactly what it is. But on the how often they're pressed one, Bruno was miles ahead of everyone else. I think a lot of teams towards the end of last season just figured out if you stop Bruno playing, you stop Newcastle.
Mm.
As Sheffield United seemed to have gone. They didn't get the memo.
Tonali, speaking about that position, Tonali didn't get a start in that game. I thought he would, because I thought if you're, you know, it's one of the easier games in the Premier League. We've obviously bought him to play. We've bought him with a view to being in our first 11. I would have thought that would be a good game to give him minutes and more time to get up to the pace of the Premier League, because he had played in Milan. I mean, it obviously, whatever the team choice was, it definitely worked out because we won 8-0. But
I think as well, there's getting up to speed with the league and getting up to speed with how Newcastle play. I think the fact we spoke about how well Gordon and Bruno have been, they're two players who didn't, like Bruno didn't get a game for quite a while. Gordon started poorly. It was only from having a full pre-season. So we shouldn't be too surprised that players aren't starting particularly well. We shouldn't necessarily write them off. There's been a lot of people sort of questioning whether Tonali's going to come good. It's a bit like, if you look at the players that have gone before that we've spent big money on, Botman's the only exception who's come straight in and been amazing from the start. Otherwise, it does seem to take a particular amount of time to get up to speed with how Eddie Howe wants us to play.
It's absurdly to be writing him off. I mean, he did. Maybe it's more a case of he had a fantastic debut. And then a lot of us were perhaps kidded into thinking, right, well, there he is. He's hit the floor running, if that's the phrase.
Yeah. I think Paul's right that I think Tonali would have been introduced more softly had other midfield options been available throughout the beginning of it. I mean, it's only like the Premier League's only 6 games old. Like, it is 6, isn't it? Yeah. So,
yeah.
There's a long way to go before we know what the first choice for the Premier League is. I wouldn't be surprised if Tonali doesn't start against Man City and we stick with Longstaff, Bruno, and maybe Zanderson in that central midfield, because it seemed to work fairly well. But we've got Burnley after that, and if we can put 8 past Sheffield, I would expect us to go into that Burnley game with a lot of confidence to get not only a win, but
we want 10. We want 10,
man.
Anything less is failure.
Genuinely, if we got another like 6 or 7 nil against Burnley, that would be, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. We scored more goals in that game than Chelsea have all season.
Yeah, but Chelsea haven't really spent much money, so it's not really fair as a comparison.
I don't know if they were all true. I saw some stats on Chelsea recently, and it's just fucking amazing. Like, how bad, like, if they would be, I don't know, it's like their last 35 league games in the calendar year are like less than a point a game. It's like the rate that they're getting points this calendar year, they would be relegated in any previous Premier League season, and most of the season they would have finished bottom. It's like, fucking hell.
In this calendar year, Leicester scored more Premier League goals than Chelsea have in this.
That's it. That's the stat that was really amazing.
Fucking hell.
We are in a good position for us at the minute, in that Chelsea and Man United, who you'd expect to be rival us, both seem to be quite rotten clubs. I think we'll finish above both of them this season.
Hopefully. Longstaff, Paul asked a good question while we were watching the game. He asked me if I thought that Longstaff would ever get an England cap. He's playing well, isn't he, Dave?
Yeah, he is playing well. I can't imagine him getting an England cap. I think there are other better number eights, and that is his best position. I think with Sean Longstaff, I have a theory that all the good sides have like a fairly workman-like midfielder that does a lot of the dirty work, a lot of the boring stuff for the rest of the team. And I think Longstaff could be it for us. Like, he could become like the Milner, the
Darren Fletcher.
Yeah, just that kind of like good, solid pro, works damn hard, is good enough to play in a top half Premier League side, but it's his effort and everything else that just keeps him in a team that is aiming for the Champions League spots. He's quality.
Those players are so valuable and they're unglamorous. And like, man, I didn't want to talk about England, but like, no, I won't. Like, he, that's the sort of player that every side needs, doesn't it? I mean, I keep thinking of Man United sides because there's that's sort of like the best side of my youth. But yeah, players like Darren Fletcher or Jason Park or Nicky Butt, like players just do. Yeah,
they don't have an amazing YouTube highlights reel, but the points per game is lower without them in the team, and it's not a coincidence.
What do you reckon the soundtrack for Sean Longstaff's YouTube compilation would be? You know how like Alan McMaximum would have like some kind of upbeat French hip hop song?
Yeah.
This would be like Handbags and the Glad Rags.
Excellent. But the cover by Stereophonics.
I mean, maybe we're doing him a disservice. He's got a really nice left foot.
Eddie Howe was saying this week, like, he expects that from him, and he sees Longstaff as a goal-scoring midfielder. And I think there's no reason, if he stays in the team, he should be getting double figures. He gets, like, last season, he found himself in the box often enough. And if it does click, that's what's going to get him into the England team.
If I remember correctly, over the last like 365 days, he's in the 90th percentile for touches in the opposition box.
Wow!
In the Premier League, so that's pretty impressive. But he does just need to. One thing he's got to do is stop fucking diving.
Yeah, there's been a bit of that lately.
Not because I'm inherently against cheating the referee. He's so bad at it. He's so fucking bad at it that it's embarrassing. Like, he's terrible. Although he didn't dive against Sheffield when their player Johnson, or was it Robinson, absolutely clattered him.
Oh, I think it was Robinson, yeah.
I was surprised he stayed on the pitch, to be honest, because that looked...
Trippier reaction to that. The weirdest reaction, because Trippier like went all in, furious, and then as soon as our other players came in, he turned around to them and was telling them to calm down. So like, make your mind up.
He was the captain, isn't he? The captain.
You love him. What are we going to do when? Because he's 33. What are we going to do without him?
Well, we've got Livramento lined up, haven't we?
We've not got another captain of that level, I would say.
Yeah, Trippier, we talked about it after the Milan game, the way he brought that result home, just that experience. It just feels like when the PE teacher plays with the... No, that's...
Play to the kids, but not in that way.
Yeah, I just want to finish that sentence. Yeah, he's the grown up in the side. But Livramento did get some minutes, not enough for me to really notice him.
No.
And also, Liverpool got his first, made his debut for us.
I can't remember either of them doing anything. I think Livramento had one opportunity to like try and create something, but the ball was just, it got muddied up in the centre midfield, and that was the end of that. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Livramento get a start against Man City and give Trippier a bit of a break, or for Livramento to start against Burnley ahead of the PSG clash.
That seems to be the big bugbear. There's always something that people have to complain about. You know, that's, we all do it. That seems to be the big bugbear online, that Livramento and Hall aren't getting enough minutes and also in the context of Darren Byrne, everyone's after him. It was nice to see him get a goal because he's a lovable guy, but he's getting a lot of shit because he's not Roberto Carlos, right?
I think the goal aside, this was probably Dan Byrne's best attacking game. We were talking last week about those sort of triangles, but that triangle of Byrne, Anderson, Gordon, that worked brilliantly. There were overlapping runs, sort of Gordon's space for his goal came from Anderson drawing someone out of the way and Byrne drawing a defender out of the way. I think he's, I don't know if it's just the confidence of us being 3-4-0 up at that point. But I think Burns, 3 clean sheets in a week and a goal. Not bad. I'm not desperate for Hall to come in.
Yeah, I think it's because everyone's, you know, you want to, everyone's sort of a perfectionist, aren't they? They want the team to be as good as they can. And we all know that Dan Byrne isn't like a long term Champions League winning left back, where you wouldn't expect him to be.
But I think the danger of just going for, like, here are the most skillful young players who've not got minutes under their belt is Chelsea.
It's Chelsea. Yeah.
It's nice to laugh at Chelsea again, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely.
One thing I was hoping for that we didn't get is that Anderson didn't score, which is a shame. He didn't really look... I can't remember him having a good opportunity to score, but he was creating a lot of space and he was controlling the ball well. I think like he doesn't look out of place in that midfield, which when you consider you've got Bruno Guimarães, who's apparently signing a new contract with £100 million release clause. You've got Sandro Tonali, who was bought for, you know, a fuck ton of money. Like, little Elliot Anderson does not look out of place in that team.
I think what's nice about him as well is that in our wobble earlier this season, there was a lot of tentative football, like sideways passing, taking a touch, playing it backwards or sideways again. Anderson's always looking to get the ball forward. He's always looking to do something. He's not just playing like simple passes for the sake of it. And his movement as well. He's always making himself available. I really like him. I know he played the full game, but I think he should start against Man City and I would keep him in for Burnley as well because he's that fit and young that I think you can just rinse him for minutes.
He's only I don't see him, I mean, what do I know? But I don't see him being a like superstar type player. I don't see him being like at the very top of the game and going for 80 million somewhere or whatever. But I do see him being a very valuable member of a squad in a top team.
Yeah. It could be a bit like Wilson as well, where you're like, well, he's not going to start now Isak's in. And suddenly he's raised his game to the level where he's nearly undroppable.
I have to say, I think you two boys have been quite harsh on him because this is an 18-year-old kid who, with the best will in the world, he hasn't had a lot of like excellent coaching through his youth career. So a lot of this is like talent, like born talent, and the coaching he's had since we've had the overhaul of the youth coaching and of like Eddie Howe and his team. Like I don't know what Anderson's ceiling is, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was like first choice midfielder for us in the future. I genuinely think he's got that, like, he's got the intelligence on the football pitch. He's certainly got the technique. He needs to like get physically bigger and stronger and faster and stuff like that. But that'll happen with time and a bit of experience and a bit of confidence. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was, you know, like, maybe he's not hitting Frank Lampard levels, but like a good centre midfield, like Michael Carrick level, but in a different way.
I don't think anything either of us said contradicted that, Dave. I don't know what came into your ears, but nothing that I said was in dispute with that.
You just said he was going to be like Wilson, like happy off the bench.
Well, one, no one said Wilson happy off the bench.
Paul, it was one of you said that, oh, you get Isaac and you're like, you're quiet. You're fine to see, like, Isaac's your first choice, but Wilson's, you know, fine.
Now, making the point that Wilson's game is raised to the point where he is now first choice, despite being the less glamorous one. And you wouldn't put the same transfer value on him, but his value is clearly there.
Look, I rate Elliot Anderson.
Ever, words in my mouth like that again, Dave. Ever.
You know, no, Dave, you're hearing different things to what is actually being said. You're straw-manning us, and I hate it when you do that, Dave. Okay. our next game is, as we record, tomorrow night. Hopefully tonight, as you listen, but, you know, we'll see when you actually do listen to this. So it's a great opportunity for us to make fools of ourselves with our predictions. We're at home to Manchester City. It's on Sky, so that's good. This is in the Carabao Cup. What do you think is going to happen, Paul?
Well, I was quite optimistic reading about Guardiola not really taking it seriously, and there's going to be a lot of rotation. But then you look at Man City's rotation, there's players like Grealish, Kovacic, and other ones coming in. You think, we're probably going to rotate quite heavily as well. And I think their rotation is quite strong. Do you say we're at home?
We're at home.
I think we're in with a good shout. I won't be devastated if we get knocked out, because I think we've got a fairly congested time of it at the minute. I'd obviously like us to win. I think we need to rotate a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if Trippier starts. I know we were talking about Livramento, but I think Trippier coming off on 70 minutes the weekend might have been to keep him fresh for that. But I'd like to see, like I said, Anderson playing. I think we might see a bit of Lascelles. I think Isak will start. So we're still going to have a strong team. Maybe Tonali for Bruno, the number six role, and see how that goes.
Yeah.
I think the real winner will be Carabao as a drink.
Yeah,
if that's what it is.
That's the important thing. I just hope it's a really good night for Carabao, and I hope we all get a Carabao in and have a great night in front of the TV with a few cans of Carabao. Dave, I've got lost in my Carabao rant. What was I going to say? I don't know. Talk for a bit, Dave.
I agree with Paul. They're going to make a lot of changes. We're probably going to make a few changes. Their changes are better than our changes can be. So I'd expect like a 2-1 loss. And like Paul says, I'm fine with that. Like if we were to get past Man City, then we've knocked the best side in Europe out of a cup competition. We should then pivot from looking at the FA Cup and just concentrate on the League Cup and try and get all the way in that competition, because we've eliminated one of the best sides. I think, honestly, I would protect. I'd protect Bruno. I'd be tempted to protect Gordon as well.
Yeah.
Joe Linton's apparently back in training, but it's probably too soon for him, and I wouldn't necessarily throw him in against.
So who comes on for Portiff now that Harvey Barnes is injured? Who would be in place of Gordon on the left?
You could probably play Almiron there. You could put
Hall could play there.
Sorry,
Hall could play there.
Yeah, Lewis Hall.
Isak.
What in the front three on the left? Hall could play there.
I think he's played there before. He sounds like he can play anywhere on the left and in central midfield.
Anderson could play there as well, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. Well, you could have
not fully back there, is he? Although I suppose he might get some minutes, Willock.
I think Willock's out still. Yeah, it's a while before he's back.
Yeah, it was a cruciate ligament, wasn't it? So he'll be gone for.
I'm seeing Achilles.
I think Barnes being out does make me think. Once Joe Linton's back, in a way, that helps our central midfield problems because Joe Linton's probably more likely to play on the left, rotating with Gordon.
Of course, there's Jacob Murphy as well. He'll surely get some minutes. I mean, the question is, how seriously do we take it? Is it a situation where Lewis Miley gets some time, or is it a situation where we just think we're at home, we haven't won a trophy in 200 years, we got to the final last time, let's just take it seriously. The fact is, Man City have got, they've got two 11s who could win the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
Or two 11s who you would make favourites to win the Premier League.
Yeah.
I can see this going to penalties. That feels like that happens quite a lot to us early in this competition. I don't think Man City will be taking it fully seriously. And how often do you rotate a whole side and they like have cohesion? So it's there for the taking, Man City will be.
Yeah, I just think that even if they, say for example, they drop Haaland, they've still got Alvarez, who would be a first-choice striker for most teams in the Premier League. Like, they can play Grealish, and they can, you know, they've got unbelievable depth, and with the best will in the world, I don't think our first team would be favourites against their second choice.
Oh, no, definitely not. Speaking of unbelievable depth, though, I was just questioning who would play on the left to replace Anthony Gordon. Matt Ritchie?
Ooh.
Anyone?
I'd like to see it. The other thing I was wondering is, because the end of the Sheffield United game, we switched to basically 5-3-2 or 3-5-2 with Livermento and Hall as wingbacks. And if we're resting Gordon, I wouldn't be massively surprised if we did that.
What, and play like a 5-4-1?
Or 5-4-1 even, yeah.
Maybe.
Tried it in pre-season.
Yeah, it's obviously, you are right. They did use having the game in the bag as an opportunity to try that out against Sheffield United for a while. So it's obviously, it's not been put away and given up on. It's obviously something that's still in Eddie Howe's mind.
Mm.
I guess we'll see. All right, let's just, for the sake of it, just do a quick score prediction, Dave.
2-1 loss.
Paul?
1-1, as on pens.
Okay, that's, yeah.
You want to do the Burnley one as well?
I'm going to go a 2-0 loss against Manchester City. And Burnley. Yeah, go on then, because we won't do a podcast before Burnley.
It's got to be 10-0.
10-0. I'm going 10-0. Dave?
3-0.
Oh, we've got to get a clean sweep of 10-0 predictions.
10-0.
This pod's nothing without hubris.
All right, 10-0.
I know, it's in the bag, guaranteed.
Honestly, if we do, like, we won't, but if we did, I mean, we'd not be able to do a podcast again because we'd be too happy, and happy podcasts aren't good podcasts.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably draw against Burnley. Now, having said that, I mean,
I think historically, whenever we start flying a bit too high in terms of expectations, we get dragged down quite quickly.
It's true. And also, just teams in general, when they have that huge win, I felt like Eddie Howe was trying to like keep our feet on the ground. I saw some quotes from him saying, it's 3 points. Let's not get carried away. It's 3 points. And that's exactly the right thing.
That's very high performance podcast, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, this was not a high performance podcast. No, it was. It was a great one. All right. Let's leave it there. And hopefully, after those two games, we'll have lots more goals to talk about. Goals for the Newcastle Magpies. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave Watson.
Thank you.
Thank you to you, the Newcastle United listener. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.